From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. In what may be perhaps the only bright spot in the Trump administration's foreign policy, a summit location for the presidents of the United States and North Korea has been finalized. Donald Trump and Kim Jong-un will meet in Singapore on June 12th. And at that meeting, if it actually transpires, there will be many things discussed, and the meeting itself is expected to be historic. Donald Trump has hailed the fact that ahead of the meeting, several American detainees were released by North Korea. Strangely, media pundits in the United States have declared the Trump-Kim meeting to be a dangerous step rather than a win for diplomacy. My guest is Tim Shorrock. He's the author of Spies for Hire, The Secret World of Intelligence Outsourcing. He was raised in Japan and South Korea. He is a contributor to The Nation magazine, and his latest piece that was just published there is called Historic Korean Summit Sets the Table for Peace. Welcome to the program, Tim.
Thank you very much.
So many sort of wondered whether the meeting would happen at all. And initially, Donald Trump had suggested that the DMZ, the demilitarized zone between the two Koreas, would be the perfect spot for his meeting. Perhaps he was sort of jealous of the attention that Moon Jae-in, South Korean leader, got for his historic meeting with Kim Jong-un that just took place. And that was sort of the lead up to Trump's meeting. The location ended up being Singapore. Is Singapore a better location than the DMZ itself?
Well, I guess that's how they ended it up. I mean, it's kind of too bad it wasn't at the DMZ, because there would have been a lot of symbolism to have it there. And the South Korean side particularly was set up to have it. You know, they had this big press center from the previous summit. You know, I guess Donald Trump might have thought there'd be too much attention on the Koreas and their hopes for unification or something, and less attention on the United States and its standoff with what's been up to now, a standoff with North Korea. So who knows? I think there was a lot of logistics considered too. And, you know, Singapore is a country that does have diplomatic relations with North Korea. And there's you know, a lot of North Koreans that travel there for various reasons. So, you know, it seemed to be a good, you know, middle ground to meet on, you know, almost literally.
Right. So it has embassies of both nations. It's considered a sort of neutral ground. It too has, of course, the capability for media infrastructure, etc. So the meeting is set for June 12th. The meeting that took place between the two Korean leaders, where this historic Panmunjom agreement was signed, how does that lay the groundwork for the Trump-Kim meeting?
Well, I think it laid the essential groundwork by, you know, the two Koreas announced they want to end the Korean War formally, and they want to have a peace treaty, and they want, you know, eventually the United States and China to sign it, which they would have to, because they're the signatories to the 1953 armistice. So, both Kim Jong-un and Moon Jae-in made amazing progress, I think, in setting out a plan to, you know, one, you know, demilitarize the situation and de-escalate the whole situation and move toward much more engagement. And then also to move toward a situation where North Korea feels it can safely denuclearize, and which requires, you know, getting certain guarantees from the United States, security guarantees. And so, you know, all that's was discussed at the bilateral meeting in Panmunjom. And I think, you know, Moon Jae-in is going to be here in Washington on May 22nd. And so there's going to be a lot of discussion between Moon and Trump. But there's a lot of kind of jockeying going on, you know, mostly in the media right now. You know, a bulletin just went out from the South Korean news service Yonhap saying that North Korea is threatening to actually cancel the summit over these military exercises, which are actually going on as we speak. And that was, you know, a little bit of a surprise to me. But I was actually more surprised that until now, the North Koreans have not said much about these military exercises, which are taking place and which have included some of the so-called strategic weapons that were of concern to the North before, such as US B-52s and F-22s, you know, both of which are capable of, you know, delivering nuclear weapons. And so, you know, I think the North Koreans were kind of sending a signal that, you know, they're not going to be necessarily, you know, forced into a situation where, I mean, I think basically a lot of the US officials want them to, you know, surrender basically without giving much in return. And so I think, you know, there's going to be some, you know, back and forth about that. But I sincerely and, you know, seriously don't think that the summit will be canceled. I think, you know, Moon Jae-in will, if anything, will step in and make sure that, you know, they do something about the North Korean concerns to get the talks, keep the talks on track.
And, you know, just to think that a few months ago, we were, or really even weeks ago, we were worried about a nuclear showdown between North Korea and the United States. Here we are. This ought to, of course, be a massive win for diplomacy, particularly under somebody like Trump. And yet in the U.S. media, you mentioned the South Korean media, in the U.S. media, there's been some strange pushback. Can you give us a sense of what pundits have been saying about this potential Singapore meeting and why you think they seem to have a problem with it?
Look, North Korea is a country they all love to hate. Okay, it's very hard to change that. And so, you know, all last year, it was like, you know, we have to have a tough line against North Korea. You know, they're a danger to us. They're building nuclear weapons, et cetera, et cetera. They say they'll never negotiate their nuclear weapons away. And then the reverse happens. And North Korea says, yes, they will. They will negotiate about denuclearization. And so, you know, every time the North Koreans come, you know, toward us in terms of meeting our demands, all these pundits always say, well, oh, okay, then you can't trust them, or they're lying, or actually, you know, what they're saying is very distorted, and, you know, we got to keep all our eyes open. And it's almost like they move the goalposts every time North Korea says or does anything. And then North Korea, you know, and also the other big hole in their thinking to me is that South Korea and its accomplishment in, you know, getting us this far is completely ignored. And the role of Moon Jae-in and the South Korean government in, you know, getting this diplomacy going and, you know, getting to a situation where they're, you know, talking about getting rid of their nuclear weapons and missiles and shutting that program down. I mean, that's a huge accomplishment. Yet these naysayers in Washington just, you know, keep wanting to retell their narrative about how terrible North Korea is and it'll never change. And so, you know, I think, you know, what's the real issue is whether there can be actual change here. You know, the North Koreans have been saying for years they want an end to what they consider the U.S. hostile policy. So, you know, is that possible? I think that Trump, President Trump, to his credit, and his Secretary of State, former CIA director Mike Pompeo, you know, have actually, you know, had extensive talks already with Kim Jong-un and his top people, including Kim Yong-chol, who's the sort of, you know, basically ran their intelligence services for many years. And they really worked out some of the details that are going to be discussed and decided upon in Singapore. So, you know, I think, you know, I have to give them credit for that. But the thing is, like, there's all these different voices here in Washington, you know, within the White House, different voices come out and say one thing or another. Bolton, you know, says something that's slightly counter to what Trump is saying. And that, you know, and so sometimes it's like that. I'm not sure the North Koreans can really trust the United States side, you know, and pulling out of the Iran agreement is certainly a sign that, you know, I mean, you know, that to be wary of any promises made by the United States. So, you know, I think at this point, you know, we really have to watch really carefully, you know, how things move in terms of how the Trump administration and the White House, you know, approach this and whether they listen to, you know, I mean, Prime Minister Abe, who's had a very hard line all along, he wants, you know, his issues taken care of. The Japanese prime minister, and he's, you know, he's going to visit Trump too. So he's always, you know, getting this pushback from people more on the right. And it's certainly true in Congress, you know, and a lot of Democrats are pushing against him on this issue. They don't really like the idea of, you know, direct negotiations between a U.S. president and a North Korean leader. They hate the idea of it, in fact. They think that's a huge gift to North Korea. And it's just kind of, there's just this mentality here that North Korea is just, you know, an intractable enemy, and we can never trust them ever.
Is there also a sense that they don't want Trump to have this win?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you know, I'm sure you and I agree that on every other issue, both domestic and foreign policy issues, Trump has been an absolute disaster. But just because a broken clock is right twice doesn't mean, of course, that what is potentially a diplomatic win should be dismissed because we don't like the person involved.
I ask these people all the time, like, would you rather have a war? Would you rather go back to the situation where we're, you know, almost, as you said earlier in the show, like in the middle of a nuclear conflict? I mean, come on, like, let's give some credit to the South Koreans for, and give some credit to the North Koreans for coming this far. I mean, the thing is, like, and you can hear this through U.S. officials. I mean, what North Korea did last year was they said they completed their state nuclear force, but they, you know, they built a missile capability to hit the United States and to hit U.S. bases around that region in Japan, Okinawa, and South Korea as a deterrence. What they've always said, that's their deterrent force. And they built it, but they stopped short of putting a nuclear weapon on a missile and having them be able to go through the atmosphere and hit a target. So they do not have a nuclear weapon that right now that's capable of hitting the United States. They have lots of weapons, but they're not, they can't place them yet on a missile, and they haven't tested that. So they stopped that testing. And I think that was the key signal that was sent to the U.S., to the White House and the Trump administration, that, you know, they're serious about talking because they stopped their building of that system before they actually got to that completed system. And I think that's kind of been missed by a lot of the coverage as well, you know. And that was, you know, when he, you know, it was like this November and December period. And then it was January 1 when Kim Jong-un gave a speech and said he would, you know, like to participate in the Olympics, and he'd be willing to send a high-level delegation to South Korea during that time. And that's what started this whole process. It's really hard to explain. I keep calling it the Washington consensus or the groupthink. You know, it's just, and you read it every day in all aspects of the liberal media here, you know, all these think pieces and, you know, hot takes that you see in the Atlantic and the Washington Post. You know, they bring up one thing over another, one thing after another about why these negotiations won't work and why the Trump administration is not prepared and how Trump, you know, Kim has taken advantage of the United States and blah, 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 without seeing it right in front of them that the two Koreas are working out a peace process in an incredible way and actually moving to implement it. So I think that's what we need to keep our eye on.
Well, Tim, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We'll post a link to your piece in The Nation magazine from our website. Thanks so much.
Great. Thank you.
My guest is Tim Shorrock. He is a contributor to The Nation magazine, and his latest piece will be found at The Nation's website as well as our website. It's called Historic Korean Summit Sets the Table for Peace. And we've been discussing the Singapore meeting that's to take place June 12th between Kim Jong-un and Donald Trump. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find out more about us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.